Hello there, this is Holly, and we are here at Gap Gap Radio. I think we have Coach Alameda logging on, so we're going to get her in a minute. And we're at Gap to Gap Radio, extremely excited to welcome to the show Lonnie Alameda. Coach Alameda is the head coach at Florida State University, and although they've been really good for some time, they've made it to the College World Series and winning it last year in 2018. So we're going to get Coach Alameda.
Hi, Holly.
Hey, Lonnie, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. So I know that you just got back from the West Coast. What time did you get in last night? Really late?
Actually, this morning. We got this here probably about 45 minutes ago. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
We did a red eye from Phoenix to Atlanta, and then Atlanta down here to Tallahassee. So, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's a good overcast day here, so it's perfect for some nap time.
Yeah, perfect. Now, no, I think you have to, because it's been my last coaching job was in 2008. My last coaching job was Morehead State here in Kentucky in the area, and I think they've changed some rules since then. But I think you have to give still like one day off. Is that the case?
Yeah, well, two. So they have today off, and then they get tomorrow off also because today is considered a travel day, even though you have to be home before 5 a.m. If you're after 5 a.m., it's considered a travel day. So, yeah, so we have to take today and tomorrow off, which is fine. They're going to be zombies anyway, and they got papers to do. So, on top of us as coaches, we'll be zombies too.
Exactly. So you need some recovery time. So I want to for the listeners and everything. So again, I appreciate this. I've done radio shows before, and as a coach, of course, we've not reached the level you have, of course, but we have to do radio shows a lot and different things. So I'm on the different side of the mic, but I want to, some of the listeners here, especially in the Louisville area, have not, maybe doesn't know a lot about you. So we want to kind of get to know you first, but some of the achievements for the listeners, 2018, of course, they won a national championship last year, and your coaching staff was the National Coaching Staff of the Year last year, 2018, the NFCA National Coaching Staff. 13 to 17, you were the ACC Coach of the Year. I got a question for you. Not that it matters. You'll trade a Coaching of the Year award for a national championship anytime. But were you not National or ACC Coach of the Year last year?
Mm-mm. No.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they gave it to Pittsburgh. But, you know, Pittsburgh had a good year and a good run. And, you know, I think sometimes, too, you know, for the ACC, we've done a pretty good job and kind of been the flag bearers for the conference. You know, so you get tired of one coach all the time, and I totally get that.
Yeah.
And, you know, Pittsburgh made it a good run. So, you know, people always say that, well, that's silly. But in reality, you want to continue to grow your conference too. So,
Exactly. Well, and then in 2005 and 2007, you were the MWC Coach of the Year. That was when you were at in Vegas, right?
Yep, Mountain West Conference.
And so – a lot of awards. I did the bio, and for those that listen, if you go to the website or the link on the radio show, you can get her complete bio. It's like a book. You know, you've been coaching a few years, but you've accomplished so much. It's been really cool, Lonnie, is that I've been doing as much research on you as I can, and I go to old videos, and I'm going to different things, and one of the really cool things about doing these shows is you get to know the person pretty good, at least externally, not internally and things, but you get a pretty good idea of the person. Yeah. There's a couple things I want to get to. Your coaching style really is the thing that I'm very, very interested in as an old coach and things like that. It may not be very interesting to the listeners necessarily, but I do want to get to that a little bit. But the first thing I want to ask you, and I guess it is coaching style a little bit, this past weekend, Not that we want to go after the negative necessarily, because losses happen. But mm-hmm. so you got your first loss of the year. You started off, I think, 22-0. You got your first loss against Grand Canyon, and then but you were 3-2 for the week, or the weekend, I guess, so to speak. So I guess what my biggest thing is, not so much on the loss, but what did you learn about your team this weekend? I'm sure you learned a lot, because we learn sometimes more from losses than wins.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it was a 10-day road trip. So we started last Friday, went down to Orlando, mm-hmm. played UCF, got on the plane, flew out to Phoenix on Tuesday, played at Grand Canyon in Phoenix on Wednesday, and then drove down to Tucson on Thursday and played U of A Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So it was a long trip with the red eye coming back today. And, you know,
yeah.
I just think that you have to endure a journey to find out what you are as a team on and off the field. I think it's so important. And
right.
so I guess the first thing, you know, you go back and you're like the national champion, right? It just, it's
uh-huh.
kind of looming over you, the defending the title, And then all of a sudden come out, we're just gangbusters and hitting the cover off the ball and doing great things. Uh-huh. And so now you're 22-0 going into a series, and the kids are feeling a little bit, not only have the bullseye on their back, but now also like, oh, we're undefeated. Are we going to go undefeated? Are we going to lose? Uh-huh. You know, and there's all these like questions. And so, you know, by losing to Grand Canyon, and they're a great ball club, you know, I mean, everyone's, oh, it's a mid-major, it's this and that. And, you know, and, you know, I think we were a little bit tired, but that had nothing to do with how they played. You know, they had the right hit ball at the right time, and we didn't show up. And I think those are good lessons for us, and just travel. How do we prefer to travel? I don't think it had anything to do with seated and pressure at all. I just really think it was the travel part and the logistics part of us getting there and being prepared to play. And so that was the lesson we got from that one.
Now that probably, do you think that prepares you? Because your postseason is full of travel and hotels and things like that. Well, I think some of your, I was looking at the schedule, I think a lot of your postseason looks like it's in Tallahassee. But but you still probably have to do a lot of hotel, a lot of traveling, especially when you go to Oklahoma.
Yeah, yeah. We try to put ourselves in the best position to where we could host in softball. If you get a bid to host, you can host regionals, super regionals, and then be able to go to the World Series. And so, yes, there would be that 6 to 10 days that you'd be out in Oklahoma City, and that would be a part of just knowing how to travel and time change and preparing your bodies and all that stuff. So, yeah, that was a good lesson for us, good for the freshmen. I think the thing I was most proud about is just the ability to bounce right back. We came in game two, won 11-1, put the hammer down. And so it showed right away that, you know, it didn't linger around. We got our message sent to us, and we were good to go.
I saw a little bit of the video. The first inning, I think you come out and scored 4 or 5 runs the first inning. The game after, which really, and you know, it's really interesting to see the body language of players in that situation. It looked like Grand Canyon going, oh, darn, here they are.
Yeah.
You know, they, So again, we want to talk about some of this stuff. We'll kind of go along, but I'd love to, for the listeners to get to know a little bit about you. I think you grew up a little bit like up through high school, like you grew up in California, I believe, but tell us a little bit about your upbringing, your history and things like that.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up in Northern California in El Dorado Hills. You know, luckily I have a very outgoing outdoors family. You know, we're big campers and played a lot of sports, and my parents always played slow pitching in leagues, and we were always outside. I was big into horseback riding with my mom. And, so sport wasn't, you didn't really specify at a young age like they do nowadays. So, you know, I got to play basketball and volleyball and all that kind of stuff. And I even played volleyball in college, and, you know, that just the game has changed so much in that aspect of it. So I feel like I was very fortunate to be around a lot of different coaches. I was pretty good at softball. I wasn't that good at basketball, but you get to play a sport that you're not good at, but you still love it. So you learn by playing other sports, you know, if you're not really good at it, but you learn to be a part of a team in a different way. And so I'm just, I think I was very lucky that I got to experience a lot of different things at a young age that have helped me be able to relate to a lot of different situations and players, you know, now as a coach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I know a lot of us, I'm a little older than you are, but a lot of us old timers talk about how in the old days we had to play multiple sports. We didn't have 12-month seasons and that type of thing. I know in Florida it's even more so that way than it is up here. But so would you be an advocate, like if you could, like, magic wand change the world, that you almost had to play other sports type thing? Would you be in favor of that? Obviously, we can't. But,
I think,
you know.
Yeah. I think at a young age, for sure. You know, I do think as you get into high school, you know, maybe you could you go back and forth on if you want to be really good at your craft, you got to spend time on it. And if you look at the college game of softball right now, kids have spent a lot of time on it, and the college game is really good because of that reason. So,
yeah.
But there's got to be balance also. I think the thing that we're seeing in college is a lot of kids are coming in injured, and by their senior year, the mileage their body has, they're all walking around like a veteran, you know, that's been in the league for a long time. And it's not, you know, so we've got to find that balance of maybe, you know, maybe you only throw so many innings pitching a week, maybe you only do so much, you know, and so then that's on us as college coaches to figure that out. And so I'm kind of between both. You know, I didn't play all year round, and I didn't play at the level that the kids are playing at now. And the level softball is now is awesome. We just got to be able to turn it back to take care of the bodies of the kids.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Well, if you don't, other players are going to, and it's going to be very difficult if you don't focus on it at least 10, 11, up here especially, 10, 11 months down there, probably 12 months. But if you don't, other players are going to, so. So you were a pitcher, and I got a question for you. I don't think I sent you this in to ask you before, but I'm reading more. You were talking about wear and tear and veteran and stuff like that. I'm reading more and more about, because in the old days, pretty much because of the natural motion of pitching and things like that, there is now some evidence that there is some wear and tear of the arm a little bit more and more. Is that what's your thoughts on that type of thing?
Yeah, I think that it is a natural motion for the rotator cuff, but where most pitchers have problems is in the lower back. Something has to take the brunt of the amount of times your arm's going in a circle and the amount of force you're putting into landing on that front side. And the only reason we just don't know about it is because we didn't have Major League Softball like Major League Baseball did. So Major League Baseball is going to go and research, because they're investing money in these guys to come in and play a long amount of time. Well, softball is just trying to get 4 years out of college, and then there was really nothing past that. Well, now you're starting to get a little more people involved in sports science and human kinetics and understanding how the body works. And so you're getting those conversations about the lower back and the spine and rotation. And, you know, so I think that we're getting educated a little bit more, because there is money going into the research and development of athletes. You know, and I think it goes across the board for all athletics, you know, just how your body works. And so, you know, you want your players to be able to pick up their kids at the age of 30, you know, and hold them. And, you know, and if you're having a bulging disc at a young age because you're pitching all the time and you're just getting 4 years out of them and kicking them to the curb and moving them on and they can't lift their kid, that's not fair, you know. So,
exactly.
I think that goes on us to research that,
Yeah. Now, shift gears a little bit, kind of go back to your you started your college career at St. Mary's in Texas, which I think there's, what, isn't there like four or five different St. Mary's in across the country?
There is, yeah.
Yeah. And then you were there a couple years maybe, I think, and then you transferred to Oklahoma, University of Oklahoma. I don't know what the transfer rule was then. I assume that it was okay. What, if you don't mind kind of talk, because I know I want to talk a little bit about the new transfer rule and the impact I think that's having on some of the programs and what your thoughts are. So kind of your experience as an athlete transferring and what went through your mind and what your thoughts were, and then how you think it's affecting the game.
Yeah, I know for me personally, you know, we didn't have the funding to be able to go to college. And so the scholarship was a big thing for me and an opportunity for me. So being able to go to St. Mary's in Texas, one, I love traveling and I love experiences. So it really was fun for me to have that chance to see the state of Texas and San Antonio in general. And I'm really excited about it. But it just, I wanted to hit, and the coach thought, you know, pitchers pitch and they don't hit. And, you know, just it wasn't, I wanted, you know, again, multi-sport athlete and wanted to play a whole lot. And he wanted to protect his pitcher. Totally get it. So at the end of the year, was going to go to junior college in California to look to transfer somewhere else for 2 more years. And at the time, middle of summer, my club ball coach was hired as the assistant coach at the University of Oklahoma. And so he took a bunch of us from the state of California out to help grow the University of Oklahoma. So I was only a year at St. Mary's, and then I spent the next 3 at the University of Oklahoma. And I went by unseen. You know, he called me a week before school started and said, hey, this one kid, she got a medical red shirt, and we have a little bit of money, and you want to come on out? And I said, heck yeah. So it worked out well. And
perfect.
I think the transfer rule, personally, I just it's really hard because I think it's been around a long time. Transfers has been a part of our game for a long time. Social media makes it a lot bigger than we did back in the day. You just, you know, you wrote letters and notes. You didn't have things posted within seconds of what was happening. And so I'm a full believer in, you know, the women only have 4 years to play. Some of them get to go on professionally, but not as much. And they're really the professional side is you're getting your degree and your experience. And if you're not happy as a player, you're not going to be happy in school and you're not going to be happy as a person because you put so much time into the sport. So why would I want someone here that doesn't truly enjoy what they're doing? And why would I want to hold them back from getting that opportunity? So are there certain cases that can be vindictive and really hurt a team? Yes. But I think they're a lot less percentage than just the kids going out and trying to find the right spot for them to grow as people.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that makes sense. Yeah, that's the scary part is the, as you said, like the travel team situations and the contacts and people out there actually recruiting the girls purposely to get them to leave schools and that type of thing. But, you know, at that point, they're probably got a pretty good idea of what's going on, and they're not going to be, as you said, probably a small percentage are probably going to be swayed that way, but they're going to stay where they're happy to begin with, too. Probably.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I'm kind of talking recruiting. I mean, if I'm a parent and I've got someone trying to recruit me away in a not very good fashion, that says a lot about the character of the program that's doing that. And
I
agree. Think that if you're looking at trying to develop as a young person in the sport and try to develop as a person through the sport, there's a lot that you can look at. And so I think everything happens for a reason. You know, I think people can cheat their way through things, but in time it's going to catch up to them. And in our game, it has. In our game, the people that have tried to cut the corners, they've been found out and they've had a brief moment of success, but it hasn't been endured. And, you know, I'm just a full believer in that and I don't get caught up in it. And I want to be around kids and people that want to be happy and enjoy what they do.
Yeah. Fantastic. So those that are listening, if you are listening live, of course, this will also be archived so people can listen to it pretty much forever, as long as there's any internet. you can call in 646-564-9536, and I'll be looking for you there. And there is a chat in the on the page there if you want to send a message to, in the chat, and I'll try to watch that as well. So I'm kind of watching my notes, doing the talking and watching all this. So it may take a minute or two to get to you. So let's get to your coaching kind of experiences a little bit. So you started out as an assistant coach at Barry University and then went to Stanford. Is that correct?
Yep. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. At the time when I was down at the University of Oklahoma, I really wanted to get into sports broadcasting. And so I contacted ESPN and, you know, they had the ability to come up and archive VHS tapes up there between midnight and 6 a.m. as an internship and work your way in. And I just didn't have the funding at that time to be able to do that, but it was still on my bucket list to make sure I can make that happen. But I had to figure out how to make some money in between time to do that.
Exactly.
So at the time, my boyfriend was playing with the Detroit Tigers organization, and I said, you know what? How cool would it be to go down the state of Florida, get a GA job, get my master's, be around him a little bit? And so I called every school in the state of Florida, and Barry, Lisa Knowles, was the only one that called me back. And she said, you know, I have a stipend for, I want to say it was like $3,000, you know, it wasn't anything. And I'm down here in Miami Shores. And so, you know, not knowing how big the state of Florida is at a young age, I just packed up my car and drove down there. And, you know, 20 million hours later, I ended up down in Miami. I was like, wow.
Wow.
You know, I, again, just taking advantage of opportunity, and I was way far from where the Tigers were, but I got to hang out with the Detroit Tigers. You know, I watched him play a lot, and I met a lot of the coaches there, and, you know, it was great to, for me to learn. Fell in love with coaching when I was down there with Lisa, and Lisa's now coaching at South Carolina, and just started growing my softball opportunities. And so, I obviously never got into the ESPN deal because I was just so in love with coaching the game and sport, and that's where Stanford became an opportunity closer to home. And you know, just really just so lucky to have a lot of really cool people along the way to open doors for me.
That it's the I guess the forks in the road that we get, the opportunities, and taking those opportunities to grow and to risk. I mean, obviously to drive a million miles to Florida is there was a lot of risk involved there and stuff. So, so then you end up taking the head coach at UNLV. So, culture change, obviously. You go from assistant coach to head coach. I know a little bit about that, and there it's experience. You had a lot of years as an assistant. So when you got to UNLV, what was pretty much excited, pretty nervous, kind of both sides?
I think I was very fortunate when I was at Stanford to have a lot of responsibility. And so I wasn't so nervous about running the program. I think the biggest thing when you go from being assistant coach to head coach is all of a sudden it's all on you. You know, and you don't ever know that. You don't ever know it until you're head coach. So, I, you know, I kind of, when I speak in front of coaches, you know, I always kind of point out there, I'm like, hey, you assistant coaches, you know, you always have a second thought about what's going on in an opinion. And I totally get it because I've been in those shoes. You will never know what it's like to be a head coach. And the head coach doesn't know, you know, what the assistants are thinking. Like, it's just, you've got to appreciate that and respect that on both sides of it. And to worry about what your kids are doing at midnight, to worry if they're going to class, to worry if they're okay, to worry if they're happy, like that is on your shoulders all the time. And that's probably the biggest change, you know, and the minute you, you can call your head coach and say, man, now I know what you were going through, you know, and it's just a really amazing experience, but can worry you for a while because every decision you make is affecting a lot of people, and it's quite I wouldn't say worry, but you know, it's just, it's a lot of weight. It's heavy. It can be very heavy.
I agree. It's pretty I mean, you're talking about, and you're taking young women from 18 to 20, I mean, the path that they take when you, when they walk on campus to the point they leave campus is really, those 4 years is not very long, but it changes their life completely.
And that, you know, my mission was always to be able to brush my teeth at night and know I did the best I possibly could, because you are going to make some unpopular decisions. And you're going to be the only one at times. It's very lonely in that position at times. And as long as you can look at yourself and know that you're doing the best for the organization, and that's all I wanted to be able to do when I laid my head in the pillows. Like, I made the best decision for the organization. And, you know, sometimes that's really hard to do, but that's where you got to stick with your goals and ethics and values and all those things that you've built for the program.
Yeah, exactly. So any advice real quick, just like young college coaches that are assistants currently that want to become a head coach? Maybe they're struggling, they're not getting opportunities, interviews, that type of thing. Any kind of advice you can give them?
Well, I know it sounds kumbaya, I guess, but I'm a firm believer in everything happens for a reason. So, you know, I interviewed for I don't know how many jobs, and I wasn't really looking for jobs when I was at Stanford, but, you know, I interviewed at Tennessee, I interviewed at Oregon, I interviewed had phone interviews at LSU. Like, I had a lot of really cool opportunities and interviews, and nothing ever really transpired for any of them. And, you know, and it wasn't like I was looking, but after time, you're like, well, maybe I'm not meant to be a coach. And then all of a sudden, you know, because long, like a fit, and it was like, perfect, you know? So I just think that as long as you're trudging the course and, you know, and you're pretty happy in what you're doing, the opportunities will come if you can stay positive with it. And the other part of that, though, I tell young coaches is you got to get outside your comfort zone too. And they're not just come knocking on your door, you know. So getting out and doing camps and clinics, meeting people, you know, always following up with somebody that you meet, you know, with an email or drop a note. And just the connection piece is so big.
Yeah.
I got to Florida State because of connection. I didn't get to Florida State, you know, because someone called on my behalf. It's because I knew in my communities, you know, I volunteered for Title IX community, and I met the president of Florida State. And 3 years later, they're hiring a softball coach. My name comes across his desk, and he remembers who I am. You know, so you just never know when you get out there how down the line those connections will pay off for you.
Yeah, that's the one thing it took me a while to figure out. I did not do that very well when I first started coaching. The networking is gigantic in all regards, and everything you do, it's so important. So you get a UNLV. I think you had a tough first year, but then you turned it around, I think, completely, like 44-win season in 2005. I guess the question when I'm looking at this is, what did you do? What happened?
Well, I guess fortunately for me, both programs I've taken over, Shan McDonald and then Coach Joanne Graff here at Florida State, they'd been there for a while. They had a culture, and they were really good people. They were just they just lost a little bit of energy. They'd been there a while, and it just needed a little bit of a spark plug. So I inherited two good pitchers at UNLV. I inherited two really good pitchers here at Florida State, and that's the key to softball. So right away for a little energy, and you change maybe a little, tweak a little bit here and there. It's easy to start it off like that. So you look like a genius, but in reality, you've kind of inherited something that's already been pretty good. It needed a little bit of love. And so, you know, so I think that that's one part of it. But I also think that the second part is I've been very fortunate to have really good assistant coaches. And, you know, I've only actually had two sets of assistant coaches in my career. So the loyalty has always been there. And they've always been, I think, the respect for the big picture. And that, of course, starts from the top. You know, if you're going to set a standard from the top, that there's got to be the standard all the way down. And my assistant coaches have always been that too. We buy into the big picture. We're going to argue at times. We can close the doors. We can get after it. But it's still about the big picture of the program. And I've always tried to keep that at the forefront of what our mission is. And that's being good on and off the field. I don't care about wins and losses. I care about the standard of how we run ourselves and the process that we daily go about being a Florida State student athlete or a University Rebel student athlete. You know, like, it is very important that the standard is always held.
Yeah. Very cool. Let me ask you, I'm going to shift gears again as well. So I'm dying to get to these a couple questions or a couple things. So when I see video of you, of course, video can be edited, can be whatever and stuff, but you're talking about culture, you're talking about standards and that type of thing. When I watch you coach on the field, you're actually, and I don't want to be offensive, I don't think I'm going to be, but you're almost quiet. You're soft. You're not yelling and screaming and loud and things like that, where a lot of young coaches feel that to get things done, they have to do the yelling and screaming. Is that something? Because I know one of the things we learn as coaches, you have to be yourself. You have to learn your own style. But is that something that you just naturally went to? Is that something that just fits for you? Or am I just seeing it wrong? Are you yelling off camera?
I'm not a yeller and screamer. I never really have been. I mean, I in my early years, I did get, you know, I get heated, a little hothead every now and then. I've definitely got some Portuguese in me that can get fired up. And You know, and you have to learn how to manage that as a young coach. And it's hard, you know, as a young coach, because you work so hard and you feel so overwhelmed. And now things aren't showing up on the field. You know, the field is your exam, your midterm, your final. Like, that, those are things. And it's being shown in front of the world. And, you know, so coaches get embarrassed. And then when you're embarrassed, they start to point fingers or yell at people, say, it's not me, it's the players, you know. I think as you get older, you realize, like, nobody really cares, you know. It's more about your organization. And so I think for me personally, I guess it goes back to standards. I set the line, and as much as people don't think I'm yelling or screaming, I'm on the kids all the time. And it's just, I'll have a conversation with them just side by side. I'm not going to embarrass anyone. You know, I'll walk up to a kid on deck, or maybe a kid's at first base, and I don't like the way they're hustling or their body language. And, you know, I just look into, you know, I'll say into their ear, like, you know, I mean, you know, like, I don't know, like Sid Cheryl the other day, you know, I said, hey, like, and she's frustrated with her hitting, you know, I said, it's not about you right now, Sid, like, it's not about you, you know, and, you know, it's just kind of like a parent stern voice, you know, they're like, oh yeah, okay, you're right, you know, but if we don't have those conversations off the field and in practice, why would I be able to have that conversation in a game? Like, I have to have it all the time. Because that's the standard. If I blow up in the game and I wasn't like that and I didn't hold the same standard in practice or in some community function, then I'm truly not being this consistent coach that I want the player to be. And I think that part's very important. So I don't know. I just thought I've always been that way. And I think when you get to play as a coach, the calmer you are, the calmer they're going to be. You know, the game is just to be played. I'm not supposed to be yelling and screaming in it. Like, I need to get after them in practice to prepare them for the game. And let's go play and see what we're all about. And let's have some fun with it.
Right, right. Yeah, the I think a lot of coaches miss that. There was a professional baseball scout that I was talking to years ago was giving me something. He was a former college baseball coach, became baseball scout for, I think it was I don't remember the team, but I was going to say Detroit, but that would have been pretty ironic. But so he said he was in watching Iowa State and Iowa play or something. And one of the teams, one of the coaches, I don't remember specifically, but they were really having a bad day. And he overheard the coach talk to the team. And he says that just something we need to work hard at starting tomorrow or starting the next day at practice, whatever. And it really, I think a lot of coaches like the post meeting stuff and the yelling and screaming, and we feel like when we're young, we feel like that's what we have to do. And I really love your approach. Like, we get embarrassed, we try to show that it's like not our fault. And I think there's so many that do that. If they can get past that, that's great. That would be great advice.
And we don't post game meet a lot because the kids know. The kids know if they didn't perform.
Yeah.
I don't need to sit there and tell them 10 minutes after the game they didn't perform. I don't need to take – I know maybe after, you know, maybe after a game that we didn't show up, I can get into them. But I'm not going to do it every single game, you know. I mean, they know. And then the other part, they're going to go home and they're going to listen to their parents. And their parents are going to tell them how bad they were, you know, because the parents are all involved too. And it's not a parent's fault in the sense – I know the parents love them, but they're so into it that they feel like they got to coach them up. So sometimes my conversations are the next day after everything's settled in, everyone's kind of relaxed. Then we'll meet the next day and be like, all right, like, you had a good night's sleep. Let's talk about what happened yesterday so we can be better as we move forward. So then you're fresh mind. You're not really frustrated. You're talking about the process of the game and what happened during it and how we mismanaged it, whether we didn't show up, whether we didn't know where to go, or we just didn't execute. Like, there's a lot of things that we could talk about that we can get better at. So I think for young coaches, like, you don't have to talk after every game, you know? I mean, everyone knows what happened. It's just we feel like that's, you know, like, oh, we debriefed it. Well, did they hear you? You know, I mean, you're involved in the game for 2 hours, and now you're hearing someone yell at you that, you know, you're horrible. They're not hearing you, you know?
Right.
So, so that's something that we very rarely talk after a game. And if it is, it's maybe very quick. Hit this point. This was good. See you guys later. Very, very quick.
And, you know, as we know as well, and it's one thing you learn as you coach, is that telling them, like, one of the things that I learned about my catchers, I kept yelling at my catchers. They weren't blocking. And eventually I figured out, well, I can't keep they're not learning by me yelling at them. I had to work at it harder. And so so even the talking afterwards isn't going to help them get better unless it's maybe effort or something like that. So you mentioned something again. We're kind of back and forth. I guess it's kind of how my brain works. But so the professional softball league, I went to see my first game actually last summer because I've been out of the game for a while and stuff. And I didn't even know there was professional softball until, I don't know, I've not known for very long. I know you coached, I think, 1 year, like a year or two ago, and you've been involved with it and stuff. What, I guess a couple of questions is like, what do you see is how's the health of the professional league? I think there's a team that just dropped out, but we picked up another team. And what's the impact of the professional league doing to college softball, you think?
Well, so we've had professional leagues for a long time. They've just varied. So we've been floundering for a while. But, you know, you look at Major League Baseball and some of the professional leagues, they floundered too until they found their niche, you know. And so I think it's been awesome that we have it. Do I know where it's going? I don't. But do I know that there are so many women that talk about, so many young girls and so many girls that get in college that talk about playing professionally that that's never been a conversation before. And I think that's so cool. So we are getting to the kids that they can play after college and it doesn't have to just be Olympics. So I think that is really cool. The thing to grow our game is corporate sponsorship. You know, that's where you get into actually being professional. So right now we're like, we're a little bit more of big time club ball minded because these people that are supporting the professional league are millionaires that are having a club team essentially because we don't have corporate sponsorship to put us on TV. We, you know, we don't have Schick and Dove bars, you know, and all these people wanting commercials in this, you know, and that's the extreme next level. But if you look at ESPN and how much they're getting into the college game, if we can continue to work all these outlets, you know, maybe down the line, something amazing can happen for this sport. And so it takes all of us. And I think the other part of our professional league right now is there's a team from Australia. There's two teams from China that are coming over to the league. They're buying a team in the league to develop their teams to play at the highest level in 2020, hopefully 2028, you know, when it gets back in the Olympics. So you could see, I mean, China is putting so much money into it. So is it a professional league? I don't know. It's almost like an international league right now because international teams are coming over here and playing here. And some people look at it as like, oh, that's not professional. But it is growing the game. If the world gets better at softball, more people want to see softball, then we've got greater opportunity. And so we all got to step back and look at the big picture and really jump in and support as much as we can and just try to get, you know, try to bring one or two people who've never seen the game, you know, come over and see this game. All of a sudden they become fans and we just, we all have a little responsibility to it.
It's, the international aspect of it, I think it's pretty cool. I mean, I think the game I saw was Australia against, it was up in Ohio. I think it was the team from, but it was, they moved some, And even the team from Ohio, I think I just happened to be there in town and I just saw that there was a game and I drove and watched the first three or four innings. And I think the team from Ohio had an international flavor to it as well. So, So it was really, really cool. The level of play course was really, really good. The fan base was not very good. It was like during the middle of the week. It, so there's not a lot of people there, but it's pretty exciting. And and I love your approach. You talk about things and that's one of the things is, so I'm trying to build this business and try to do all this type of stuff, kind of get back in the game and everything. And I'm noticing that I didn't notice before as well, there is a little bit of this, I guess because competition is getting stiffer and there's more money out there, people are getting more, what is a good word for it, closed, not open. They're more, I'm going to use the word selfish, but it's understandable, not in a bad way necessarily. Like, this is my organization. I'm going to do it my way, and I don't care about anybody else. I just want to make this money type thing.
Yeah.
And I'm being kind of mean, but yeah.
Nope.
Is that
it's true?
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I think for a long time in our sport, you know, people are getting frustrated because, I mean, you're having third party club ball people make a lot of money off softball right now. So if you look at UCCA, Triple Crown, PGF, ASA, like all these youth leagues that are making so much money off the game of softball. And we as an organization, we're getting frustrated with that. But if you turn back the other perspective and be like, wow, like, people are making money off of softball, you know, like softball's growing so much that people see the opportunity to make money. Can we move this in the direction that everybody moves the mountain up, or are we going to flatline out where everyone's taking from it? So if we continue to be like, oh, this is bad, this is bad, this is bad, and try to make new things, or we just all get together and continue to push softball up the hill, then we are going to be better as an organization. And it's not going to be in my lifetime that, you know, the pro league is going to be huge, but I can be a part of continue to energize and get these girls pumped up about the opportunities and keep making the better decisions for the growth of the game, for the world, not just for us.
Yeah. Fantastic. You know, I would love, I mean, that would be a great line to finish the show. And I know you're super busy. I want to get a couple things from you. Recruiting, give us like an overall Florida State or your recruiting philosophy on at Florida State. easy. Yeah. We don't have two more days or whatever, but
Well, I mean, honestly, probably about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, Travis Craig and I sat down and said, okay, what's a Florida State softball player? Like, what is that? Let's really like break it down, because I think when people go out and they talk about recruiting and kids are like, oh, I work hard and I hustle. And I mean, the reality is you've got to play at the level. Like, you have to be able to play and contribute at the level that you're at. So skill is probably the first thing that we look at. And we like very versatile athletes that can run. Like, that's kind of our MO, and that's what we look at. But then there's also a culture piece. And it is our responsibility to find the players that are going to fit here, flourish here, because I go back to the transfer thing conversation we had earlier. If kids are not happy here, they're not going to get comfortable, and then they're not going to be able to flourish as a student athlete. And that is such a huge responsibility on our side. And it's so important that we're very honest and transparent and clear in our objectives of what the student athlete's going to get while they're here. And so I think that when you say, what is the recruiting style? We are who we are when we recruit you, when we're not recruiting you, when, you know what I mean? We are so, oh gosh, I don't even, I'm just transparent, I guess is a word, you know, there's just nothing here that's any different any day that you're going to be around here. And I want you to love coming to school here. I'm not going to roll out the red carpet and make you think you love coming to school here. And I think that the genuine part, right? I mean, we are blue collar. We're going to have some fun. We don't need all the bling. We just want to go out and play a good game of softball and really enjoy it. And so we really try to find those athletes that fit that mold.
Fantastic. And that is, of course, a challenge. And you're a state school. So obviously you have an in-state tuition stuff and scholarships and all that kind of stuff to deal with. Do you try to stay, I assume, obviously try to stay in Florida is your goal, but because of the tuition and the scholarship situation, everything. But let's say there's a girl in Louisville. How would she best get your attention?
So, I mean, recruiting has been awesome because it's been, we've changed in the last year. So now we can only really recruit juniors and seniors, which to me is genius, because that's really when we're growing. You know, when we were going to 7th and 8th graders and 9th graders, I mean, there were some no-brainer kids, but they're still growing, you know, as kids.
I know.
So they needed to do that. The rule change has been good for us. But, I think for us, we do recruit, you know, you have to recruit your backyard. And our backyard, fortunately, is Georgia and Florida. Because we are 20 minutes from the state line. So, you know, sometimes we're called South Georgia, and sometimes, you know, I mean, we're the Panhandle, and then we're Florida. Like, there's a lot. We recruit in Texas, we're Virginia, we're getting to Arkansas. You know, we do have a couple of California kids, so we're all over the place. And camps and clinics are our best way to recruit because we get to actually spend some time with you. And to me, the big picture is you get to spend time with us. Like, we could love you all we want, but if you don't enjoy us, then we're going to have problems. And so, so I think camps and clinics are a really good way. But, I mean, it's word of mouth, it's emails, it's videos, it's Twitter, it's Instagram. I mean, there's so many ways that these kids can get in front of people. But I think the one thing when you want instant connection and the ability to see if I'm coachable and I can play, getting to camps and clinics is probably the best way.
Yeah, good advice. Yeah, good advice. So video, you said, what about like, because back I was a recruiting coordinator at Morehead State, and in our area, and we had the camps and the showcases and things like that. But the travel teams were, I felt, more successful to recruit from travel teams than the high school, sadly. Is there similarity down there? Because I think at the Louisville coaches clinic that you were at that I watched, I think there was a girl that asked you a question about travel teams. I think you were the one she asked and said, "There in the state of Florida, the high schools more and more choosing travel teams over high schools to play." Is that, are you seeing that?
Yeah. You know, I think for us to recruit during high school season, the same as our season, so it always gets pretty tough. So where we shut down, you know, in June, so June, July, and August become a good recruiting time for us because we don't have anything else other than camp. So that actually kind of works into the club ball mindset. And I wasn't a big fan of kids not playing high school and club ball because I think you could play high school and you could be the only one that's serious about softball and try to leave all the other kids are just maybe getting a letterman jacket, you know, and so I think it, you know, the mindset could be good for you. But then now I'm starting to see kids, they're throwing their pitching year round and they're not giving their bodies breaks. And I'm like thinking, no, I mean, if there's a time to take off, it might be the high school season. And that just may be this day and age that we're in right now, these kids playing so much. But I know a couple kids that run track or play another sport just to kind of give their arms a break. And so I think it becomes personal and kind of where you're at in your game and what position you are, that the high school is a decision. But like for the state of Georgia, we recruit because they play in the fall. So we actually go to high school games and the playoffs and all that because, you know, we are actually just starting practice then. So it's a little bit different than Florida because they are playing now and we're playing now and you just can't get away.
Yeah, true. So I know you've mentioned a few things that kind of answers this question. We'll try to finish up with a couple more questions, if you don't mind. But changes that you've seen in the sport maybe in the last – I think it's changed a lot, and it feels like in the last 2 years. But maybe in the last 3, 4, 5 years, any of the major changes you've seen in the sport?
Offense. I think the offense is getting better. And I don't think everyone thinks it's because the pitching is getting worse. And I don't agree with that. I think that we're bringing really good offensive minded coaches in. And then I think a lot of us females are learning from a lot of the offensive minded coaches and we are all growing together and the game is getting better offensively. We're getting strategy. There are more games on TV. So more scouting is happening. And when you put all that together, you got smart offenses working against really good pitching. And, you know, back in the day, kids could throw 80 games and a gazillion innings and have a 0.1 ERA. And, you know, now with all this information and, you know, we have relievers, we have closers, people are starting to work mindsets with that. Baseball's been doing it for a gazillion years. Why are we any different? So I'm going to say offense is changing our game a little bit, and it's pretty outstanding, and I think it's going towards a better, well-rounded roster. I think you're going to have more pitchers that specialize in one area to be able to come in and get you out of something or maybe give you 3 innings of relief. I think there's going to be a lot of really cool things that change with our game as we move forward.
Right. Yeah, that's pretty exciting. That is pretty because to me, as much as I do love pitching battles, and I do, and defensive battles and things like that. But the strategy of changing different things in the middle of the game and stuff is pretty cool as well. So shift gears a little bit. The Musial Award, named after, of course, some decent baseball player named Stan Musial, being a little sarcastic, a little facetious. So you received that this year, 2018 Musial Award honoree. It looks like some, let's see, in addition to you, the 2018 Musial Award honorees, Jim Tomey, sister, I'm going to mess this up, Jean Delora Schmidt, Ozzie Smith, Jordan Bohannon, Gerald Hodges II, Ty Kane, or Kuhn, Caden Whaley, and Kate, can't pronounce her last name, should have probably done some research on that. Yeah, so tell us about that. Yeah, what is the Stan Musial Award?
Well, so for those that don't know, and if anyone's listening to this right now, if you are a sports fan, you need to go. It's kind of like the ESPYs of the character of sports. It's the coolest thing. I mean, when I walked in and they have tissues on everyone's chairs, I was like, oh, gosh.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. A heartfelt event.
Yeah.
And, you know, as an honoree, you go there the day before and you meet all the honorees and you hang out with them the whole day. So we got to hear stories and I got to meet all, you know, Kate and Jim and Ozzie. And it was so cool.
Yeah.
You know, Sister Jean, the Musial family, the whole entire Musial family comes and they're a part of the event. And, so it's a family feel event right off the get go. It's warm, it's touching. It's, they celebrate you because of what you do for sport. And at first I was like, oh my gosh, you know, I mean, I returned to Jersey for Oregon. They left it in our bus and it was a, it was a thing that I feel like everybody does, but I know that, you know, some people don't take the time to do certain things and I don't think that I'm special by any means, but then when I started really realizing it, I think it's really cool that someone takes the time to recognize the little things because that is what really is so fun about sport. And in and today's era, when we start talking about contracts and deals and who's not doing this and the negativity, what a cool opportunity for someone to take 2 hours and talk about all the amazing things that sport does for people because people know that. They just need to celebrate it. So it was cool. I mean, it goes from, you know, just making the right decisions, you know. So Kate, you know, she had turned in a scorecard and they forgot to put some of the extra strokes on her scorecard and the team wasn't going to win the state championship and it was her coach's last time. And, you know, she went up and she could have got away with it and she didn't, you know. I mean, what high school kid does that? Like, what like, if this was brought to you, would you do it? You know, and you're sitting in those chairs and they're talking about the story and she's like, it's just the right thing to do. And it is. It's totally the right thing to do. Would you do it in those moments? And, you know, that goes on for hours. Just so many really cool stories. And
cool.
I'm going to go back. I'm going to go back as a fan. I'm going to spend the weekends there. If I don't have anything with softball here, I'm going to be a part of it because it was really inspirational to me. And honestly, a really good check-in as a coach for me to give me that ground of why we do what we do. And so truly enjoyed it.
That's, I think, probably what happens a lot of coaches is you coach for many years and you get wrapped up in the wins and the prep time of the games and the practices and the recruiting and all the other stuff you're doing. And you have a tendency to forget why you originally got into this. And it's really great to get that.
Good gut check.
Go ahead.
Yeah,
that, and it's kind of a little bit of a segue. I was thinking about, you know, you win the national championship last year. You got the Musial Award. I know it gets to be kind of a whirlwind and stuff. Back in, what was it? You were at, you're in Vegas. Your first year, not too good. Second year, you go up really good. And then I think you had a really rough year your last year there. I think you had a couple injuries. Is that right?
Yeah, we had eight. I had two catchers left. One was playing center, one was playing short. It was
banana
the amount of injuries we had. Yeah. So, but almost one of my more fun years actually, because the kids were so selfless. Whatever they, you know, whatever the team needed, they were going to do, and that was pretty awesome to see. And so, you know, again, about process and lessons. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and it's like you're talking about at that point and stuff, but there had to be a point at that. Like if somebody could come back in time, you know, and say, you know, Lonnie, I know it's a tough year and everything is great in a sense where they're being selfless and you're having a great year here and you've got all these injuries and you're recovering. It's going to be good. In 2018, you're going to win the College World Series at Florida State. You know, at that point,
yeah.
Probably, yeah, not going to believe that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, even after we won the World Series, it probably took a couple months for it to even sink in that we actually won the World Series. And there's times that I look around my office and I see a picture and, you know, it just takes you back to like, wow, we really won the World Series. You know?
Yeah.
So I think I still get into that La La Land at times. Yeah.
I bet.
It was definitely a whirlwind. And I do know that we as a coaching staff said if it ever happened, we were going to celebrate it. We did. We did a 2-month tour and we took the trophy around. We kind of did a Stanley Cup deal and we took the trophy around all the booster events in the state of Florida.
Very cool.
And
yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I think that sometimes we as coaches too don't recognize how many people are involved in supporting athletics and how much that means to them. And, oh my gosh, we had so much fun with it. And hindsight, if, you know, we were ever do it again, I'm going to send the trophy with each player to take home for a week, just like the Stanley Cup, because I think that, you know, again, there's so many families that were a part of that in their hometowns and the growth, and that's what keeps the game going. And, you know, so, but I'm so glad, you know, we did what we did because we did truly enjoy the experience of winning it, not just in one moment, but in many.
Yeah. Wow. Very cool. So I'm going to let you go. Any last, and I'm going to, because I may forget, before I go, the more I read about you and the more I look, and now that I'm talking about you, you're such an amazing ambassador to the sport of the internationally. I mean, I'm just applaud your approach, your daily approach, your personal approach, and just very appreciate you being on the show, getting to know you better, and all the things that you do.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, I've been so lucky through the game to, you know, I've traveled the world. I've met so many really cool people. It's almost, I feel as if my responsibility to give back, you know, I mean, that kind of how things work. And so it's not so much I go out to try to do this. I just really enjoy doing it and I love doing it. And, you know, I'm a softball nerd and junkie and I absolutely love it. I'm so lucky that my passion is my career at the same time.
Yeah.
And so I'm very grateful for that. So thank you for having me on. And I hope that, you know, there's a little bit out there that can help someone in deciding what they're doing with coaching or how they're handling people. And, you know, I just just want to share and help grow, and I continue to grow that way too. So I appreciate it so much.
Thank you. And I think you're in Louisville to play up here at University of Louisville in April, so I'll hopefully get out and watch you play. I'm not really a Louisville. I'm from Indiana, so I actually hate no, I'm just kidding. But so but I do get out to see them play out there when it starts getting warm. One of the things I don't miss about Ohio Valley coaching is coaching in February, and those dugouts on metal benches and stuff is not fun. Yeah.
No.
So
no.
I wait until it gets warm.
Florida. Yeah. I see it. Well, I'd love to see it. Yeah, we're up there April 5th, 6th, and 7th is that weekend. We're up there, and it's actually an ESPN game. We're playing a Monday night game, so it's Saturday, Sunday, Monday. So, but would love it, and anyone else would come out and be good.
All right, great. Good. Well, good luck, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. All the best. Take care.
Thank you. All right,
bye.
So that was Lonnie Alameda from Florida State University, and just a great interview. Pass the word if you are a softball nerd and you want to learn a little bit about Florida State, you want to learn a little bit about Coach Alameda, you want to learn a lot of stuff about coaching. Advice for young coaches, absolutely amazing. But one of the things we talked about and that I admire is her approach is absolutely optimistic, positive, building growth and not tearing down or anything. So really, really good. So spread that word. More information on Gap to Gap Radio is on the website nationaldiamondacademy.com. And we have the next show. Next show, I get to do a little bit talking about lessons, and it's the top 9 things that you need to know about lessons, about individual lessons. So that'll be the next show. And then the week after that, we're planning on having Ron Ray with Future Stars of Sports. It's a tournament organization for softball located locally here. So the show is pretty much what we want to try to do is get a national, maybe international flavor. We're going to try to get some professional level coaches and administrators and players on here. Historical, try to get some old timers out here. Current people, having Lonnie on here is absolutely crazy, amazing to have her there. So people like that, hopefully get some other college programs on here. Feel free to email me with questions or comments, holly@nationaldiamondacademy.com. Facebook page is also National Diamond Academy. There is a Gap to Gap Facebook page. All that information should be on this radio page. So again, that was Lonnie Alameda, Florida State University. Outstanding. She did an amazing job. Of course, I'm sure she's done that once or twice. And I really appreciate her having her here. So that pretty much concludes the show. If, again, you got any questions or any comments, you got any suggestions of anybody to be on here, just let me know. And we'll see you next week. It's every week at 12 o'clock. On Monday, 7 o'clock Eastern Time. Have a great day.